From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Nine days into his new job as acting police commissioner of Baltimore, Michael Harrison has listened to a lot of citizens, hugged at least a few, and promised he can bring reforms and restore trust. Fern Chen of Baltimore Brew catches us up on challenges waiting for Harrison and next steps to confirmation. David Troy of Baltimore City Voters and Reverend Todd Yeary of Douglas Memorial Community Church describe concerns they hear from residents. Yeary says he picks up skepticism.
Is the Baltimore City Police Department in a position where it can be reformed at all, no matter how highly qualified your commissioner might be? Are we too far along without needing a little stronger influence to help turn the department around?
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. This is Acting Baltimore City Police Commissioner Michael Harrison's second week on the job. Much of his time has been spent at community meetings across the city, hearing questions and concerns from the public. Harrison comes to Baltimore after a 28-year career in the New Orleans Police Department, the last 4 years as its superintendent or chief. In addition to addressing Baltimore's heightened levels of homicides and violent crime, Harrison must navigate the reforms mandated by the consent decree with the federal government. Fern Chen is the founder, editor, and publisher of the new site Baltimore Brew. Fern, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sheila.
So New Orleans and its police department entered into a consent decree with the U.S. Justice Department 6 years ago. Michael Harrison spoke about it when he met with Baltimore residents at Dorothy I. Height Elementary School last Tuesday.
I came in year two of our consent decree and moved it forward to right when I left a couple of weeks ago. They were above 90% compliance in every single one of the paragraphs, so they're looking to exit now sometime this year. That's another reason that made it easy for me to accept this opportunity. Figuring out that we had done such a good job there, and now it was time to do something different, taking the lessons learned from New Orleans and bringing them to Baltimore, because the cities are so similar and the dynamics are so parallel, are so similar, that what is happening now we've been through.
Recordings of that and Harrison's other community meetings are available online at the Charm TV Citizens Hub on YouTube. Fern, talk about the experience Harrison brings to Baltimore.
In addition to the consent decree that they are further along at in New Orleans, he brings, and he touts it quite a bit, his efforts to deal with corruption at the department as well, and that's all intertwined with the consent decree issues, of course. He returns to that. When I've listened to him on the at the community meetings, he really does stress that he has the strength to tell officers, you know, what to do, and if they're not doing it, to truly discipline them. So
he was head of the public integrity section.
Yes,
of the
he was head
New
of the
Orleans
public integrity section, and he also came up through the department. I mean, he knows one department from, you know, his, it was more or less his first job as an adult, you know, up through to today. So I think he has a good sense of, you know, sort of a police bureaucracy and, you know, how it ticks.
Last week, as Michael Harrison was holding all these community meetings, we also saw results of a voluntary survey of police officers by City Councilman Yitzi Schleifer, in which more than 4 out of 10 officers said they don't, quote, fully understand the consent decree, and 3/4 said they, quote, feel restricted by the consent decree, close quote. What hurdles does Harrison face in implementing the reforms mandated by the consent decree here?
The biggest hurdle, I think, is the trust factor with the community. I mean, this is a built up over long decades and recently, you know, some intense years of, you know, terrible problems, as we know, from Freddie Gray on through the, you know, the gun trace task force to the death of Sean Souter, which,
you know, detective.
The detective who was found dead the day before he was to, you know, testify before a grand jury in the corruption trial of fellow officers. So, you know, all that leaves a huge, you know, odor of corruption and mistrust that is a huge barrier, I think, for Harrison as he tackles the consent decree.
So there's all those issues with the community. What about issues within the police force itself?
Well, officers, I know, are feeling very pressured to do their work under the new shift schedule, to meet the requirements of the consent decree in neighborhoods that, you know, are dangerous, in situations where they feel like they don't have enough backup. I know under the new union that there are a lot of questions about how is this going to be implemented and, you know, how can officers be expected to make these, you know, consent decree rights of the citizen consideration when they're really just trying to keep their head above water, doing their job and staying safe and protecting the public. Another challenge that he faces is recruitment. I mean, it came out recently that last year there was a net loss of 36 officers. So there's, you know, the patrol division is really hurting. They really need more people to basically do the street level patrol. And here they are, you know, losing the, you know, net number of officers. So that's a challenge. In a larger way, the consent decree monitor put his finger on the big problem, which is, he says, a culture of dysfunction, a culture of corruption. He said it was, what were his words, deeply dysfunctional. He was very emphatic about that in speaking in Annapolis, that the department has a long way to go before it can really meet the requirements of the consent decree. So that's a stiff challenge for Harrison.
In response to concerns residents have raised, has Harrison presented specific strategies to address crime or to implement reform?
He has, some would say, dodge these questions. Some would say he has, you know, wisely not tried to assume he knows too much early on in the game. People have asked him about some of the diciest questions that are, you know, before law enforcement right now. Do you support arming school police officers? His answer was, well, if the citizens and the officials, you know, support this and want this, I certainly would back them up, you know. So it's a fair deflection, I guess you would say, or wisely politic. You know, as far as specifics, I think he's just kind of waiting to see.
Has Harrison taken a position on State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby's announcement that her office will no longer prosecute residents for possession of marijuana?
I believe he has also been very cautious on that question as well. I mean, these are the big ones ahead of him. And it's an important management question for him, is how is he going to get to, you know, he's got to work with the state's attorney's office. And there's, clearly a gap there right now.
Right now, Harrison is acting police commissioner. What's next in the confirmation process?
Well, there's some more meet and greets this week. He's got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, more of those. The man has to have a lot of energy. Then he goes before the city council. He's before the appointments committee in March. They will take testimony. They'll hear from him, and he will have to be approved there. And then it goes to a vote of the city council in mid-March.
Have all the city council members met with him? Do we know?
I believe so. I don't know if they all have. I know they've been working their way through meetings with him. I know he came to, I was at the city council lunch. So he came to the luncheon and he addressed them as they, you know, had their salmon and sort of introduced himself. I think that was on his first day. And I know they've all made an effort to meet with him personally.
And some have visited New Orleans to talk to people there?
Yes, yes. And we haven't seen the report that apparently is coming from the city council, sort of the results of the council's visit and investigation into Harrison's background in New Orleans, but that's still expected.
Thanks for walking us through it, Fern. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Fern Shen is founder, editor, and publisher of the news site Baltimore Brew. Quick break now on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. When we're back, two community leaders share their thoughts on Harrison, culture change, and the BPD. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Michael Harrison took over the Baltimore Police Department as acting commissioner last Monday. Since then, he spent most evenings in schools across the city, introducing himself to residents and hearing their questions and concerns. What are the concerns residents are raising? If Harrison is confirmed by the city council, what will he need to do to rebuild trust between Baltimore neighborhoods and the police? David Troy, who lives in Bolton Hill, runs a Facebook group called Baltimore City Voters, and he's here with me in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning.
You've met Acting Commissioner Harrison. What was your first impression?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to meet him at an event at City Hall a couple weeks back when he first was looking around town to buy a house and that sort of thing. And, you know, he seems like a really warm and decent man. You know, I think he's very approachable, and I think he really gets kind of what needs to be done to the Baltimore Police Department to change the culture. I think the challenge that he might face is like actually doing that, because I think there's some systemic constraints on that. But I think he understands the problem.
You run this Facebook group called Baltimore City Voters.
Right.
What are you hearing from them about their concerns?
Well, I mean, I think the first round with Fitzgerald, everybody was really upset with kind of the way that the process was run. And also, you know, from a public relations standpoint, you know, he did not really resonate with people. You know, I think he kind of rubbed people the wrong way, especially the issues about his background. He didn't want to release things. You know, if you want it, you can get it through a FOIA request. That really rubbed people the wrong way. And what's strange about that is that I don't even think he had anything much to hide. So, you know, I think people are more pleased with how this second round of the process has been done. I think it's, you know, it still probably could be improved upon. I think this administration's kind of learning, you know, how to do this stuff well. But that's what, you know, people seem to be saying is that, like, this feels like a much better fit. And I think people are hopeful and somewhat confident that this might actually work out this time.
And what are you hearing from the Facebook group about their concerns about crime and policing?
I put up just kind of an informal poll asking questions. What questions should we ask this guy? You know, what's important to you? And the two questions that floated to the top, the first one was with relation to, the FOP, the union, and whether or not it would be possible to effect real reform given the FOP's kind of resistance to that. They just put out a tweet a few weeks ago saying that the culture of corruption has been addressed. And that seems a bit premature, you know. So that was one question that was on everybody's mind. And then the other one was what specific strategies to address gun violence, would you employ? And, what kind of auditing should we be doing to really fix things? A variety of other operational concerns that people have.
At the Northwest meeting last Tuesday, David, you asked Acting Commissioner Harrison what he thought was driving gun violence and how he would go about reducing it. Here's part of his answer.
The culture of violence when it comes to guns, it is just that. It is a culture of violence. First of all, it's a horrible availability of guns, both legal and illegal, but it is about the decision. Let's be real. The decision when it comes to gun violence, the decision to commit a crime and the decision to use the gun is not made when the trigger is pulled. The decision to use a gun is made when a person walks out the door at home with the gun.
He also talked about strengthening criminal consequences for carrying illegal guns. What do you make of the answer you got?
I mean, I think he's right. I think that in a lot of ways, this whole situation is a matter of economics and public health. And, you know, to the extent that gun violence is an expression of a kind of a public health ailment, you know, I think we ought to be treating that and the drug war in similar ways. And that's, you know, my opinion. I think a lot of people also feel that way. But I mean, I think you can think of this as a kind of an epidemic. And we see, you know, cyclical patterns in a city like Baltimore where we might see a lull in gun violence for a while, you know, maybe economic conditions are getting better. And then when things start getting maybe, you know, harder for people, things, you know, people start turning to alternative economies and, you know, things get bad again. So I think approaching it from a really high level systems thinking kind of an approach as a public health problem is really smart, and I hope that he pursues it in that kind of a fashion.
As he responds to citizens, Harrison seems to often raise the idea of culture change. Culture change in the police department, in the community, among teenagers, among people who carry guns. You know better than I do how intense the efforts have been to change culture in so many areas of Baltimore for so many years with mixed results. Do you see a reason to be more optimistic now?
Well, again, I mean, I think you have to start to understand really where culture comes from. And it's really about defending values. I mean, I am a business person. I run a small company, and I've read a lot of stuff about business and culture change. And from everything that I can gather, it's really about hiring and firing based on your values. And that really requires leadership for somebody in that role of police commissioner to be able to say, okay, if you are not defending this organization's values, which here's what they are, we're really clear about them, then you don't belong in the organization. And to not look the other way when you know that there's people that aren't defending those values. And that's where culture comes from. So I think part of the reason why we've had such a hard time is because it's difficult to hire and fire people because of the way that the local laws are set up at the state level, as well as the law enforcement officers' Bill of Rights and the kind of constraints that are imposed by the union. And I don't say that to be anti-union or anything like that. I think workers should be able to organize. But I think we have a real structural problem that's preventing us from fixing the culture in that organization. I think we need to fix that. And I think that when you have a bad culture in the police department, you see a mirror image of that bad culture out on the streets.
I'm grateful to you for talking us through it. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
David Troy runs the Facebook group Baltimore City Voters. This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about first impressions of acting Baltimore City Police Commissioner Michael Harrison, who is taking part in community forums across the city. I want to turn to Reverend Dr. S. Todd Yeary, senior pastor of Douglas Memorial Community Church. He is the past political action chair of the Maryland State Conference NAACP and chair of the Baltimore City Community Relations Commission. Welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Sheila.
You've met Commissioner Harrison. What was your first impression?
I met Commissioner Harrison actually a couple of years ago when Kevin Davis was the police commissioner in Baltimore City. It was toward the end of the Obama administration. It was after the November 16 election. And there was a meeting of various police departments in Chicago. And at that meeting, there was a conversation about how do you engage around preparing to deal with issues around consent decrees, transformative policing that has been found to be in violation of the Constitution in terms of patterns and practices. New Orleans delegation included now our acting commissioner, Michael Harrison, who was leading up that department. What I gathered from him is he was one well-respected in the room amongst his peers. What he had to say was very relevant, didn't get caught up in the hyperbole of the moment, but he was also very attentive to many of the community voices that were in the room.
Sounds like you were impressed with him.
I was impressed with him for his candor. Very often what we see in kind of inside gatherings, if you will, where a particular segment of the community, a discipline, if you will, they're meeting amongst themselves. When they're outsiders, there tends to be this kind of rhetorical pontification, if you will, lots of high talk, but no real substantive conversation. His voice and his insight into what he had learned coming into the role 2 years into New Orleans' consent decree, I think was very helpful, and it gave me a sense that as we were trying to work through, remember Mayor Pugh had just come into office trying to figure out how do we get this consent before Judge Bredar, before the current administration comes in, because we felt like that Department of Justice might try to pull out of the consent process. I think there were a lot of things that we were trying to get a handle on because time was not on our side, and I think his voice actually was particularly helpful. And yes, he was impressive in that setting and in the conversations, the one conversation that I've had with him in another room that David Troy was actually in. It was equally impressive in terms of his sensitivity to the responsibility of being police commissioner.
What are you hearing from people in the Douglas Memorial community about their concerns about crime and policing?
Well, they're the concerns that are shared across the city. One, violent crime is out of control. There are concerns about over-policing in some communities, not enough policing in others in terms of how residents and citizens are treated. There's still a concern. Where are we with this consent decree? And in the backdrop, there's a great deal of concern about the recent convictions and pleas with the Gun Trace Task Force. How does that whole thing come about? And is the Baltimore City Police Department in a position where it can be reformed at all, no matter how highly qualified your commissioner might be? Are we too far along without needing a little stronger influence to help turn the department around?
Reverend Urey, at the public meetings, residents have talked about feeling like officers are strangers to their communities and expressed a desire to improve those relationships. What advice would you have for making that happen?
Recruit from the city. You know, many other jurisdictions, those that police the community live in the community. And since we have such a high percentage of those who live outside of Baltimore City, many of them live outside of the state of Maryland. What they are is they are commuter police officers. And so they don't know their community. They don't know the people in it. There is no lingering presence beyond the time that they're actually on their shifts for duty. So that's number one. Look at recruitment. Look at recruitment from within Baltimore City, folks who are of the city, who want to help turn the city around. Not to say that there aren't qualified persons from outside, and we've had this argument before in state law about whether or not you could impose a local residency requirement. That's a different issue. But I would start there. The other thing is we've got to change the notion. And here's what Commissioner Harrison said when we first met with him in, I think, what was an impromptu, let's get folks in the room meeting and a conversation. But here's what he said. I want to get to the substance of what he said. He said, very often, we hear the motto of police being protect and serve. Michael Harrison said, that's backwards. It should be serve and protect, that the police department is a service organization first. That's a different way of thinking about policing, right? That if my first priority is serving the community that I am here to help protect, then the engagement begins to change, the mindset about how I interact with members of the community as I'm, whether I'm on patrol, whether I'm walking the beat, that's a big deal. Change the cultural philosophy of how we do policing. Because instead of having spatial enforcement, keeping certain groups in certain places because we're trying to do this containment thing around crime, change the whole paradigm. And I think that is a huge step to begin to change the levels of distrust. Because if the police come to the community with a mindset that I'm here to serve first, I think it alters how our praxis, right, how we do what we do aligns with understanding why we do what we do. I think that's a big deal, and I'm looking forward to seeing how that important cultural change will impact the way policing's done.
So let me ask you then the same question I posed to David Troy on this question that Acting Commissioner Harrison refers to so often. Cultural change, talks about cultural change, not just in the police department, but in the community. There have been so many efforts at cultural change in Baltimore. Mixed results. Do you see a reason to be more optimistic?
If we want the city to get better, we've got to remain optimistic. Despair cannot win in this moment. Now, as a preacher, you know, in this conversation, the one thing that I resist with everything, every fiber in my being, is the notion that we give in to the long-standing, seemingly unchangeability of our circumstance. There's still reason to have hope. The reason there's still to have hope is because the people of the city mean so much to us. This city is too important to the state and the nation for us to decide that we're going to back away from the difficulties. And let's not be naive about it. We've got an uphill battle. There's a lot of change that has to be done. But I think when you hear the levels of engagement And you see the numbers of people who have participated in these listening sessions who want to have this conversation. And the way that Michael Harrison has been very intentional about hearing every comment from every person who has something to say, I think there is a reason for us to be cautiously optimistic. Let's be realistic. There's a lot of work that has to be done to turn what has plagued the police department and the city around. How long it will take, we don't know. But what we do know, based on what we've seen from Commissioner Harrison's first week on the job, the voice that is most important is the voice that's always been most important, and that's the voice of the people.
Thank you very much for this. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Reverend S. Todd Yeary is senior pastor of the Douglas Memorial Community Church. Tonight from 7 to 9 p.m., there'll be a forum at Wildwood Elementary Middle School, 621 Wildwood Parkway in the Southwest District. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have information about the forums later this week. On Monday, the Greater Baltimore Committee is hosting a breakfast with Harrison for its members. Details at the On the Record page. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.